Hello, everyone, and welcome to our live Q&A, Awaken to Wholeness. I'm so excited to be able to bring this element, which wasn't actually in the initial plan, but along the way, I just realized how important it is to have this live interactive component so we can be together. So it's just awesome to have everyone. I wish we could have absolutely everyone, you know, but it was so last minute that this amazing crew that's here today were the ones that were able to make themselves available for all of us. So I'm super excited to dive in with some amazing questions. We've actually received quite a few questions to get us started. And then for all of you that are participating in the summit in this live Q&A right now, you'll see that there is an option for Q&A. There's a Q&A button. If you have any questions, go ahead and press Q&A and ask your question and we can bring it to the panel. And then if you have anything to chat, you can chat in that little box right down here, this box. All right, so everybody can see that. So we can get some chatting going on. And if you have any specific questions, go ahead and separate those into the Q&A so that we can make sure to pull those out and they don't get lost in the shuffle. Hello, Ariel's here. Yay! Joseph's here, Joita's here, and an anonymous iMac is here. And I see more people signing in. So this is gonna be really, really fun. So what I'd like to do, first of all, I'm Val Salidker, and I think if you tune into the summit by now, you probably know that. You've heard me say that. I'm Val Salidker. Welcome to the Awaken to Wholeness Summit. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Yes. Awesome, awesome.
Hello.
Good, good, good. So what I want to do is I want to introduce everybody that's here right now, and I'm going to invite each of you guys to say hello so that they can see you and have a moment with you and to share what's alive in you in this moment. We can just tune in and connect. Each of us connects. Okay. Well, here we go. A lot of excitement. So I'd first love to introduce a dear teacher of mine, actually, somebody who has been a mentor of mine for many years, Dee Dee Furman. Dee Dee is the founder of the Synthesis Center, a New York Times bestselling author, psychotherapist, and board certified life coach in psychosynthesis. Dee Dee, please say hello to everyone.
Hello, everyone, and hug to you. My heart is here with us and with the work you're doing that is changing the world. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dee Dee. It's in the work that we are all doing and the amazing synergy that we create when we come together. So blessed to have you. So I'd also like to introduce the lovely Jennifer Grace, Hay House author of Directing Your Destiny and award-winning life coach, amazing woman. Please say hello to everyone.
Hi, everybody. I'm so happy to be here. It is National Friend Day, and the fact that like 1, 2, 3, 4 of my awesome friends are here on the panel, I love that, and can't wait to know the rest of you, and so excited for everybody that's on here today. We're going to have a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Woo-hoo. Happy Friend Day, everyone. We got all these new friends coming in too. I will say I have been blown away by the incredible response to the summit. We've had literally thousands and thousands of people globally come together for this incredible journey. And it's just blown me away. It's amazing how many of us are feeling that yes right now. And so, you know, being so passionate about building community, this is just inspiring, inspiring. So I'd like to introduce Michael Brandt DeMaria. Michael is an integrative psychologist, a poet, author, speaker, and four-time Grammy nominee, amazing musician, and just incredible, incredible, soulful human being. Michael, it's such an honor to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Val. It's great to be here, and hello to everybody out there. This has just been an incredible experience, Awaken to Wholeness. So many of the different streams of my life, I love that psychosynthesis is a big part of my life in the past, and Jungian psychology, eco-psychology. Val has brought together incredible, amazing wholeness in terms of us as teachers and everyone out there in terms of participating. You're also teachers for us. This in particular, I'm really excited about. I've done Zoom interviews and other things, but usually just with two, maybe three. But wow, I've got all these amazing folks, and I'm feeling a little jealous because I know some of you guys know each other, and I'm excited to be part of National Friend Day and get to know you guys a little bit better. So
you can be our new friend.
My new friend, Jennifer, Michelle, Joe.
Hey.
Hello.
Yes, great. To be here. And Val, thank
you.
Group hug.
Yay.
Yes.
That's so awesome, Michael. You know, Michael and I want to say met like about a decade ago, where we literally just, we've been on the same path with so many things that we've done. And we were just bound to sort of to meet through the voice of the earth. And mm-hmm. So all of these different elements in my life, of course, are elements in your life. And our, this friend, this circle, this tribe is just growing with so many similarities, so many same passions. It's so incredible to see how our paths unfold in such a parallel way. And that's been my experience with you, Michael. So yes, new amazing friend. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. Me too.
And I'd love to introduce the amazing Michelle Alva. Michelle is the creator of the Alva Method, a vibrational healing and rapid mindset change. And Michelle is an incredible connector of body love, just bringing us so centered in our bodies and recognizing our sense of wholeness in such a magical way. Michelle, love to have you with us, honey.
Oh, thank you so much, Val. I'm so happy to be here with all these angels on this panel. And this morning, I was so blessed to see a rainbow on the way to Boca. I was going to pick up some sacred body love massage oils. And then I saw a double rainbow after that, just like 5 minutes after that. And I was thinking about us, you know, getting together today at 6 o'clock. And it's like definitely the universe is telling me there's some magic going on today. And there's some extra rainbow magic out there. So it's like everybody's a different color of that rainbow tonight. And it's just exciting to be here right now with all of you. So thank you for having us. And thank you for everybody that's chiming in. I'm really excited to see what magic we can create.
Absolutely, Pastor. It's so awesome to have you here. And it was really, really wonderful to dive in with you too. Because we've been, you know, around each other in the same community for a long time. And it was special. Like, I feel like our interview was really special for me and such an intimate space that we got to dive into together. So happy.
Yes.
Yeah.
My pleasure. What a treat. Thank you.
Thank you. And now I'd like to introduce Joe Engelson, founder of Gratitude Training, Token of Appreciation, creative peacemaker, and author of Source Movement. Joe, say hello.
Hello. I'm really excited to be on here. And thank you, Val, for really continually stepping into your power and taking new levels and taking yourself on. And I was just telling someone today how I've been absolutely incredibly impressed with what you've created here. And everything has been in such excellence. And you've actually followed through and, you know, all of that. And I appreciate that. And I think that it's important right now when we all do step into that next level for ourselves. And that's why some of us are here on the panel, and that's probably why we have the viewers on here. I believe that, you know, awaken to wholeness. My whole purpose in life is to awaken people. And so this, you know, I really feel like we're in a time period right now where there's like this mass awakening happening, and we're not really going to know that it's going to be a historical moment until maybe 100 years from now when we look back, and they're going to be like, that's when that happened. Like, you know, how they go, that's when the Renaissance happened. But while they were in it, they didn't know that that's what it was. And I feel like we're really sitting in that right now, in that time space. And so this whole summit is so appropriate. And so thank you for that. And thank you everyone for being here. And thank you to all the viewers coming in and being open and willing to see how you can contribute.
Mm.
Beautiful.
Absolutely with you, Joe. You know, I always like to invite us to reflect on exactly what you're saying, which is, you know, those future ones. You know, we live in such an immediate sense of time, but when we really expand that sense of deep time, the theme that's come up so much during the summit, we get that we are their ancestors. We are that. And so the choices we make in this moment become that much more important, right? That, like you said, we can't always see what we're in when we're in it. But when you start reflecting in that sense, you know, it does invite you to show up in a different way, you know, with everything that we have, and, you know, think about how the choices we make create these consequences, create these ripple effects into the world. Yeah. You know? Yeah, so with
it's
you.
True.
And now, I'm very excited to introduce, although I'm sure you guys have seen his amazing interview and felt his incredible energy, Ash Ruiz, spiritual teacher, music life coach, author, holistic vocal coach, and singer-songwriter of many bands.
Lordy. Beautiful Val. Hello, every all these beloveds, all these bright hearts. I'm so happy to be here. So happy to be here on with all the momentum of this Awaken to Wholeness Summit. I mean, I can just feel all the hearts here, all the energy here. It's like angels rushing in. Mm. And this is truly such a wonderful space for every atom, that the agreement of atoms that create this planet, this experience of us and bodies, all of it just naturally taken to the next level of joy. So it really is such a blessing to be here, and I'm so excited to explore what the questions are and to hear what everyone's heart has to say. And yeah, I just feel like feeling good.
I hear you, Ash. Yeah.
You guys are resonating. I know. We're gonna have some music.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful to have all of you. Ash, it's so true, right? We're coming together and create this incredible synergy. You know, and that's the magic of something like this, and why I often feel called to put events together that bring multiple speakers, like 20 plus, you know, because we create such a magic when we come together, something that we know, you know, the synthesis, this amazing experience that becomes larger than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what this amazing synergy that we step into when we come together and we get to play off of each other and inspire each other. And I'm so excited. We just had John Scotland just jumped in right on time as we're talking about the magic of our synergy. Another amazing contributor to that magic is John Scotland, who we thought we weren't going to have until halfway through. You made it early, John.
I did.
Well, let me share a little bit about you. John is the president of the Synthesis Center, working closely with Dee Dee and another amazing mentor of mine, professor, psychotherapist, and board-certified life coach in psychosynthesis. John, it's awesome to have you. We're inviting everyone to say hello and what's alive in you right now.
Wow. My turn?
Yep.
It's great to be here. About 5 minutes ago, I was on a tennis court. And I'm glad to be joining the summit. Valerie, I just want to say to you, congratulations and wonderful effort on all this great work. It's been amazing every day to watch what's happening. And I'm just glad to be a part of it and to be involved in doing this work. And I think what struck me today, Val, is seeing people who have come through our training program take the work and make their particular contribution. What excites me at this stage of our work, and I maybe Dee Dee would confirm this too, is to see what people are doing in creative ways to take spiritual psychology. There was a feature on a woman today down in Texas that I was watching online who was incorporating painting in discovery of the soul and the self.
Wow.
And, it was just beautiful to see. So that's what was jazzing me up today, was to see the good work that people are doing. Mm.
Love it, John. Thank you.
Yeah,
you know, it's amazing when we move into that deeper space of the soul and really allow ourselves to open up in this sort of really courageous way. I can, you know, but hearing from all of us, we all become inspired to do that. We unleash ultimate creativity. You know, that creative power of the universe that wants to flow through us. Mm-hmm. It's really fun to see how we each express it in our unique ways, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yes. Word. So this is awesome. So everybody is here that's going to be here for our beautiful panel. And I'd love to just start diving into the first question since we're already 15 minutes into it. And, you know, this is a question that I had people submit questions early. So we had something to really get started with. And I was curious to see what themes would come up in those questions. So I want to start off our first question with one that came in many different forms, but here's the heart of it. I'm gonna read this version of it. What would you suggest to a strong empath who is just starting to awaken and is not yet open to meditating or yoga to handle the strong emotions that come from our current world situation? You know, or maybe said another way, how does one compassionately cope with the overwhelmingly disorienting state of hyper-consciousness when we start to really become aware and awaken into wholeness? So I'm going to throw that out there, and it wasn't directed to any one person, but if anybody would like to jump in, go for it.
I came first with the felt visual sense of a tiny bud in early spring in New England that needs to be sheltered from too much snow, from the dog, from the kids, from the hypervigilance of the world around it, while its roots strengthen and its blossoms bud. So for anyone who is feeling the tenderness of this time in their own psyche, and many, many people are, I invite a sense of both openness and willingness to close and protect. And a reminder that growth happens in the dark as well as in the light.
Thank you for that, Didi. That's a really powerful image to begin with. And I especially thinking about the roots, you know, that how we are all as human beings so fragile. And there is quite an intensity happening around us in this moment. And when we start to awaken into that, like how do we, you know, what does it mean to feel rooted? You know, where is that place where we feel grounded in ourselves, you know, where we feel safe to explore, even in the darkness, even with the overwhelm, even in the messiness of all these emotions that are sitting with us right now? And it's a very powerful invitation and a great question as well to sit with.
Yeah, I'd like to chime in a little on that too. You know, we all kind of have a lot of history in our body, and a lot of times, you know, what we see in the world is kind of a display of a lot of things that we're holding in our body. And so I think it's important that we really kind of work on owning our ugly and being okay with things that have happened in the past for us, and forgiving and forgiving and forgiving. And in that, it clears the space to be able to be present to what's actually happening. Because if you're actually just a really pure channel of that energy that they're talking about, or that awakening, it would flow through and life would be effortless, and you would create the results you want to see in the world, and it would just all unfold for you. And the reason it doesn't is because we have all this, we're holding a lot still. And so I think sometimes it's good to just kind of begin to release and forgive and release and forgive. And that's what's going to open and create that space, that empathy. That almost like the vacuum that needs to be there for it to pull through.
That's beautiful. In fact, release, we can all do a release. And for the question, the release I love, a little Qigong practice, is just the palms going upward, reaching up, and then out with a nice Then imagine all of that energy going down into the earth. So, you know, part of that piece of bringing that energy as an empath that's really stirred up. Grandmother Earth will take anything we give to her. So putting it through the soles of your feet, or even lying on the earth and allowing that energy to just be taken into the earth, and hugging a tree, holding a tree, and allow that energy to move through. And the last thing I do is before I go to bed every night, just visualizing Gaia, just visualizing this amazing being that we are part of, and having your hands up and just sending that that love. And as Joe was saying, you know, infinite love, infinite forgiveness to the whole planet, which of course includes us, because we are in this incredible time of transition. And I love also, Joe, when you were talking about, you know, we can't see right now, but we are in this incredible, incredible, the great turning, as Joanna Macy says, you know, that we can't see fully, but to just that infinite love and forgiveness, and that you can send something to the global Gaian consciousness.
And to talk about, you know, where the practical meets the spiritual, being really mindful about how much you want to take in, and whether that is limiting, you know, your social media during the day that, you know, maybe you check in the morning or the evenings, limiting the amount of time that you're going to be watching the news. Like, it's so important for us all to stay informed, and it can get really addictive. So where can you set up really nice, healthy boundaries and stick to them where you're getting the information you need and you're not going into overwhelming, having too much of that angst that the world is experiencing download into your soul? So I've been really mindful about just checking things periodically. And, you know, my partner and I, we do 15 minutes of the news and that's it.
Yeah, that's also everything. Michael, that was beautiful what you just shared, you know, really in a practical way to, you know, embody how we can move through that and breathing it through. And Jen, really, really great advice on that. And even to make sure that we spend time not just limiting what we view, but also incorporating time in nature, you know, time to remember who we are and feel ultimately connected with the beauty of life, the brilliance of life.
Can I chime in for something that's coming up for me is I really believe that everything is happening for us to grow, to heal, to thrive, and to create something new. So we can look at this as an opportunity and just choose to look at everything that happens as an opportunity, because there's this divine plan. There's this creator that loves us so much and is creating all of this for us to just realign and come back to the simple things. So looking at not anything as negative, actually seeing it as, well, how can I grow from this? Maybe this is a great opportunity for me to do more meditation. Maybe this is also an opportunity for me to learn how to embody flow more through my body. And so instead of looking at it as anything negative, I've definitely been busier in my work and more people calling and more people are willing and ready. And they're just flowing like rivers instead of being like sponges and holding. And really, I mean, that's what we're designed to flow and to release and to process. That's our nature. So just as you're saying that, we can say, thank you, universe. Thank you to the government. Thank you to life, because obviously we're all being strengthened. We're going into the PhD of life, and we're all going to be feeling more connected, lighter, because this is all happening, because it's really forcing us to stop and shift. And also I think it's an opportunity to see how, yes, the social media, I mean, I know for me, if I'm too much on Facebook or I don't feel connected to my nature, so lucky for me, I can just go across the street and go to the beach. And I feel, you know, we don't realize how, yeah, going outside is connecting me back to what I am. And I think that's why a lot of what's happening is happening, because we're all kind of burnt out, I think, from the web and social media and the many, many years that we've been doing this. So I think a lot of people are realizing what you've been saying all along, Val, is to connect to nature. Yeah. But we're really taking it seriously now and we're listening. So it's exciting times. When I think about this, it's like a year from now, I think a lot of us are going to be actually much more joyful. But the slingshot goes back before it catapults forward. So yeah, it's going to get a little more challenging, I think. Naturally, that's what nature does, right? As we're cleansing. So,
yeah. Thank you, Michelle. Yeah, and it does bring us back to that. You know, remembering that evolution happens under the greatest amount of pressure. Yeah. So, yes, it feels intense, and yes, these emotions can be very overwhelming, and that's real. You know, we feel these, mm-hmm. you know, oh, it's intellectual, you know, we can intellectualize it to everything we're saying makes sense, but sometimes those emotions really do feel heavy. So how do we allow ourselves to breathe them through, like beautiful meditation that's literally called breathing through, where you're breathing in as if all these things, all these emotions, all these ideas, all of this is like, they're like granules on a ribbon of breath, and you breathe them in through your nose and you breathe them out through your heart back into the world. And as Michael was saying, you know, allowing it to become compost, allowing the earth, it's like the center of the earth is this hot molten core, right? It can transform everything. And to know that we are held in that space, so that even as we're feeling all of this, we're also simultaneously not attaching ourselves to those emotions. You know, we have emotions, but and we are more than these emotions, right? Dee Dee and John, you know, this, mm-hmm. this right? Mm-hmm. Understanding that we are beyond, we're more than this. So we can feel it and not be so overwhelmed or paralyzed by it simultaneously. Yeah.
One thing that I would just like to add, you know, is also the option of during these experiences to notice that you could at any moment take a vacation from yourself. At any moment take a vacation from the technology of descriptions. Take a vacation from having to know what an emotion is, having to know what energy is, having to know what a world is, having to know what an empath is, having to know what a you is, or what a time or a place is. At any moment, you can just stop for a second and release. Descriptions is kind of like trying to hold something. And so it's so nice to notice we have the option to allow our descriptions to open, like an open palm. And for a short moment, not that you have to hold that forever or even 30 minutes or an hour or 2 hours or go to a cave, but like for 20 seconds, have a vacation from the story of you, from the story of the world. And in that, get more familiar with what's naturally present. And in that also, in getting more familiar with what's naturally present, discovering in some way, very, very gently, the harmless nature of emotions and energy and phenomena.
You know what's so awesome with that, Ash? I love that, is that like once you do that, you can then also go in and play in other people's stories. And so you can actually let go of everything that you're believing and identifying with, and now go in and just be like, I'm going to go to this party and I don't agree with anyone there, but I've let go of all my stuff and I could go play and we can connect on a human level. Yeah. It's awesome.
There's so much we have to learn from that, Joe. I love that. And Ash, yes, a beautiful, beautiful poetic way of allowing us to feel what's possible beyond these labels and these ideas, you know, so powerful. And it is, it's so, especially right now where we feel so opposed, you know, we feel like there's this kind of like the stand is happening right now, right? And we get caught up in this us and them and the sides, and especially politically speaking, especially here in the US right now, but also all around the world, we're really experiencing this right now. So, you know, to get out of the boxes and to really start to feel and see each other, you know, as friends, National Friendship Day, right? We're all here together. So I want to move us to another question, because there's a bunch that actually have just come in from people who are here with us now. Yeah. So they're along these lines as well. Inanna, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name right, but I'm still very concerned about shame, stigma, and humiliation and judgments from people struggling with mental illness or drug addiction. Why are so many people killing themselves? Like, you know, we're seeing there's a lot of pain in our world, you know, and let's see, how can we bring this wisdom into healing communities that cannot afford therapy? Mm-hmm. So talking about how we're judging other people with mental illnesses, a drug addiction, we see a lot of addictions happening right now. So what's going on? What can we discuss around this pain that's really, you know, manifesting itself in tragic ways?
Well, as a psychologist that is on a mission to show how spiritually bankrupt the DSM is, who had a grandmother who in the 40s talk to trees and rocks and angels, and got her put in a psychiatric hospital for 40 years because of that. I have a whole issue with even the word mental illness. The key is that the culture is ill. And so to use the problem, the stigma is that the culture is projecting on the highly sensitive, connected empaths, et cetera, their own issue. It's like when the white man came to call the native people savages, this was a complete projection. They were the savages. And so it's so important to see that it's not something wrong with you. It's what's wrong with the culture. We have believed the big lie of the last 2,000 years, which is somehow we are separate and different from nature. And this is a key problem today in terms of part of the healing. Part of what's so cool about this summit is it's shifting that paradigm. So Inanna, that main issue is why there is stigma is because it's ingrained in the culture to demonize and pathologize the very thing that's telling us there's a problem. Suicide has been on the increase, not the decrease. We've had 100 years of psychotherapy and the world's getting worse because psychotherapy itself, as it's traditionally practiced, is fundamentally trying to adapt to a sick culture. So we're at a point in time where it's Eric Fromm's book, The Sane Society. The worst kind of insanity in an insane society is to be sane in an insane society. So actually, if you feel insane in this society, you're sane. So the idea is completely reversing that. And I really am passionate about this because it destroyed my grandmother and put my mother in foster homes. So I became a psychologist to try to figure out what the heck went wrong and how to right that wrong. So I've been kind of a double agent much of my life, playing both sides of that. The other part of your question is we have to get back to community for sure, because so many of the people that need this help the most can't afford it. You're absolutely right. What we call mental illness is often issues of poverty, trauma, disconnection from nature, one's own heart. We live in an egocentric, extroverted, thinking, materialistic, reductionistic society. And so this is really damaging all of us in so many ways. So bringing community back, I'm really big into that. And I think all of you, and you know, this is about how can we bring heart and soul back into our families and into our communities. And it starts with our own heart. And Cherokee would say the longest journey we'll ever make is from our head to our heart, which I love seeing all of these heart-centered folks here. It's everything you guys said, Ash, what you said about taking a break from yourself and the story is just beautiful. So let go of these diagnostic categories. Let go of calling yourself anyone else mentally ill or chemically dependent. These are, as soon as you think that you have a diagnosis, you become the diagnosis, and then actually the potential for real change begins to be diminished. Sorry, I get real impassioned about this, so mm-hmm. I had to jump in, but that's my two cents, Val.
Thank you, Michael. That was so eloquent. I don't know if anybody wants to add to that. I just had a quick thought, though, as you were saying that, too. It's like, you know, how the perception has changed. Like in psychiatry, right, there, because it wanted to be recognized as a real profession, they had to be able to diagnose, right? So once upon a time, you know, maybe the book was that big, and then it became this thick. And every year, there's so many more new ailments, like restless leg disorder, and like all kinds of random things that they can diagnose and give you a pill for. So we do have to really check our perception on that. You said it so beautifully.
Well, can I say one last thing on that, because I think it's really key. The word normal was a term in masonry in the 1600s. It's barely 500 years old, and it describes a right angle. And basically, the word normal came into psychology. Psychology, exactly. It was an inferiority complex in this, trying to be a hard science. So when they define normal, which is a right angle, the idea of kind of being an appliance that just runs like this, they began to use that abnormality, and it's done tremendous damage. The norm is not created, it's made. it is created by the system in that way. Nature, I say, people, we are old growth. We should be like old growth forests, have a lot of wild, different, shifting, changing ups and downs. You know, that's not manic depression. It means giving the context, and everybody in your situation is telling you there's something wrong with you. You start to think there's something wrong with you, and then you begin to buy into that story. So I just need to say, normal is an illusion when it comes to human experience and behavior.
Absolutely. Would anyone else like to add anything to that before we move on to another question?
I want to add one thing, just because there was a second question in there that was, how will you instruct people to face, something about how do we pay for it?
How do we
also bring the wisdom of healing to communities that cannot afford therapy or training? So I think this is actually a really key question, because also in our culture, it says that if you work on yourself, it should be free. And, you know, meanwhile, if we go buy a pair of shoes, they're not free. Or if we go to dinner, it's not free. And when we really want something like an iPhone, most people have iPhones or phones, they find the money. So there's a belief system there that is actually hindering people from actually being able to afford it, because we can all afford it because we live in a complete abundant universe. And it stops people from actually having the breakthrough and having the awakening and having the help that they need. And all we need to do is reach out to people and be in community with people, and we can all have it. I mean, even when we look at the medical profession, we talked about, oh, there's another pill for it. Well, that costs a lot more than probably what a therapy session costs or what a training would cost. And so I would caution people to just kind of stop at, oh, I can't afford that, because you can. You can afford everything and anything that you put your heart, you know, heart's desire to. And so I just wanted to speak into that. And also not hold others small. We all have incredible resources within us. We can have it all. We can do it all. And we can be together to create it all. And so I try to always refrain from labeling anyone or anything, and just be like, endless possibility.
And having been in the field for more than 40 years, I would say to anybody who's reaching out for support, ask. Mm-hmm. Ask. Tell the person you're reaching out to who you are, what you need, what you have, and there's the abundance. It starts with the open heart and the ask and the willingness to ask and tell the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really powerful addition from Dee Dee and Joe, both of you. You know, that something we might sit quietly thinking, there's no way I can do this, but it begins with us taking that first action, right? And even if we don't believe it necessarily, just start taking an action that puts in alignment with what we really want. And when things start happening, the belief system also starts to shift. It all happens simultaneously. So it's all out here. And also, I love, you know, what we were all sharing about community. You know, find community. There's even free access to things where we can come together in community, groups that are there to hold you specifically for these kind of things. Like, there's so much out there. There's a lot available. And it doesn't even always cost something. You know, so it's there if you need it. And yes, ask. Please ask. All right, I want to move on to another question, and this is around communication. I'm gonna read it, maybe a little edited version, because it's quite long, but it'll give us the sense of it. Let's see. So I want to bring this in two ways. So first, this is from two different people. So first, we have a question that speaks to, how do we, as the ancestors of our great great grandchildren, walk our own path? And yet, as we do, and then this leads into this question, daughters, sons, grandchildren, from an elder's point of view, she's asking, how do we guide them without getting in their space to grow? So being a great guide without telling them what to do or how to do it. And I think that we kind of get the sense of that. So let's dive into that, and then I'll bring in a second question that's from someone else, but it's also about communication. And I feeling called to, like, actually ask you, Didi, to step into this at first as the elder of our panel, to sort of speak to that as an elder. Like, how do you approach speaking to people coming into this, you know, without overstepping their ability to grow?
And four granddaughters.
And four granddaughters.
So I have this opportunity often, and it is a wonderful gift, and it's actually a lot easier with grandchildren than with children. And the key is listen. Listen and look. Listen to what they're asking. My 17-year-old granddaughter wanted to march, so we went to New York. My 11-year-old granddaughter wants only to draw, so there's always crayons, coloring things that she can do when she's there, and they build into stories. And so I watch each one of them. My 12-year-old granddaughter has, you know, half her head shaved and the other half dyed blue, and she wanted to march, so she got to go to DC with her mom. But her little sister, who only wants to be a princess, stayed home and played princess. So when you listen and look at them, they will tell you who they are, and then we get to just shine a magnifying glass on the beauty of who they are. And then when they're a pain in the neck, which I've noticed they can be, I can just push back a little and say, that doesn't work for me. Or go home to your parents.
That's great.
And for me, having a 16-year-old son, a teenager, and you know, he's in this world, he's always hearing me on webinars and talking about all of this stuff. And I've never tried to push or force anything on him, and I'm just being who I am. And then all of a sudden, a few months ago, he said, I want to try yoga. You know, and now he's, I want to meditate. What's that about? And I'll just answer and tell him, okay. And now he wants to go study with the gentleman that puts himself in ice cold water. Will Hoff, I don't know this man. Does this amazing breath. I'm like, this is going to be his first transformation. And I'm like, oh, cool. And I'm like, woo! But like, that's great. Yeah, let's look it up. Like, totally casual. Yeah, so I've always just been who I am without any, you know, and now the invitation was always open, and he is so interested. And I'm thrilled and acting very cool about it.
But he's going to watch you, so he'll know you're thrilled.
Exactly.
And so yeah. with the same question, what if there's some risky behavior happening? So this question led into this. So if there's something happening where you feel this could be dangerous, you find those boundaries.
Communication, you know, and I'm dealing with that. You know, I've got a ton of 16-year-old boys at my house and the things that are happening, and he tells me everything. We are in full communication, and we look things up. I let him know what's going on. He educates himself, and, you know, we create a safe space for him to understand, and, you know, it's all about communication.
And John, I would love to have you respond to this, since you spent your whole adult life working with adolescents and many of them at risk.
Yeah. You know, the first concern is always that we're keeping people safe, right? So we're thinking about that. I work, do counseling and coaching with adolescents and, you know, and their parents as well. And they check in with me, and, you know, mostly I want to find, just like with adults, the real expression of that self. Because the teenagers that I work with and the young people I work with, the reason I love the work is they're so immersed in questions of identity and who am I and how do I know myself. So they're grappling with a lot of the same questions that adults are. And so they just need enough opportunities and chances to find themselves. And most of what the students are doing is not putting them at risk. There's a lot of experimentation that goes on in terms of identity, but that isn't really a threat in any way. It's not going to hurt them. It's not going to put them at risk. And I think that you know, if we listen, like Didi, like you were saying, if we're just listening closely to people, we'll hear when there's a sense of risk. And I think it's important to know when to refer people to resources, not to get so caught up in our own methods or techniques that we think that, you know, that people can just follow their own path wherever it goes. And there are times to get people resources. And as guides to and support people in young people's lives or in older people to know when somebody needs a different kind of support and be able to refer people to that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you, John. And that great. I think that feels
good. Can I just add something that's coming up to say, I worked when I graduated physical therapy school and I was 22 years old, I went into pediatrics right away. So I learned a lot about development and working with children. And something that really hit me was to always hold the child in the highest reverence and to always believe that their highest, to see them in their highest and to, because it, in one of the courses I learned that they're limited by our limitations of what we think they're capable of. And so that really stuck to me when I had my daughter 12 years ago. She's 12 now. And I've always been conscious of that I don't want to limit her by my own limitations. So I actually think it's great. Like when she would fall, I wouldn't go try to catch her. Or, I mean, my ex-husband's a pediatric ER doctor, so I kind of didn't worry about it because of that reason. But it's really neat because now my daughter, she'll just try anything. She's fearless in so many ways. And it really is amazing to watch how you treat kids when they're really, really young. Even if they can't talk, it's the way that you believe in them. So believe in our youth, believe in ourselves, believe in their highest, and bring in that frequency of you're invincible, you're unstoppable, and just to have a lot of reverence for all ages, you know, because sometimes I think in the past, I know for me too, I have forgotten, and when somebody's a little younger, but they know themselves. We're born knowing ourselves. So if we can keep them, you know, ask them questions, what do you think about this? And get them to think more themselves. And it's amazing how my daughter, she thinks for her, she's a self-thinker. And then what can we create? You know, so that I think is important to be aware of that, holding people in their highest.
Oh, I love that. Michelle, that was a beautiful addition. Thank you. Yes, and it is a great reminder in every moment of our lives to see each other like that, you know, to really see the best in each other. You know, I think a lot of times we do become focused on the issue and the problem, the thing that's not happening versus what's really working and putting energy into that. Thank you. That was beautiful. And so there's a question here that is along the lines of communication as well. And I'm just going to sort of paraphrase it, but it's about how do we connect and communicate with our family when they have very different views. And she says, I often find myself at a loss as to how to communicate and connect with her. She's talking about her sister, particularly when we're facing major life turning events. Any suggestions on how to shift the conversation or penetrate the wall in situations like this where it feels important to connect and you're not feeling like you're connecting with your family?
Ash's advice earlier was a pretty good answer. You just stop holding on to the story, even that it's my sister, or that she's a this and I'm a that. And it's just two empty souls, full souls, non-defined souls with words or touch.
Yeah. Yeah, that feels good.
I think what I also notice a lot, that doing a lot with the Myers-Briggs, you know, the difference between intuitive and a sensor. And this is something that comes up a lot. And I venture to say 98% of everyone who is on this in this program, Awaken to Wholeness, and including those people who are drawn to do it, would probably fall in that intuitive category where the world of intuitive is the inner world of thoughts, feelings, ideas, sensations are more compelling. And that's only, you know, 15-20% of the population, where 80% of the population is what we call sensors. The three-dimensional you know, what I see, touch, taste, move is what's most compelling, is what's most real. And so it's a real challenge. I really specialize and work with intuitive feelers in particular. And in oftentimes, just because of percentages, most of the people in your family, if you're an intuitive feeler and intuitive, they're not going to get you in that way. But what's important, I think that I agree, letting go of the story is important, and just relating. But also, if you can see that literally there's a different wiring, it's a different, you know, seeing that how can you build a bridge? For me, it was huge when I realized that not everyone was like me, you know, and that they had a different way of processing information and moving through the world. And so I made up a story where I was an otter raised by a family of raccoons. And they kept telling me there was something wrong with me because I was such a bad raccoon. And I was going, well, no, what's wrong with you guys? You don't like to swim and do and eat fish this way. And then I got married, and celebrating 35 years of marriage this year, and thought I married another otter. And then I realized, wow, she's not an otter. She's a turtle. We like water together, but boy, she's not an otter. And so when I think about communicating with my brothers or other people who don't look at the world the way I do, it's been really helpful to say, you know, and even, you know, with my wife, when we quite, you know, don't quite do this, seeing that, okay, well, how can I speak turtle, you know, and try to do my best to resonate with her turtleness. And so I think in particular with the sister or something, how can you find those points of commonality and realize it's like different species sometimes talking, and not to pathologize them, don't let them pathologize you, but just because they're not being an otter, you know, and saying, why aren't you an otter? You know, my God. And, but don't let them say, you know, why aren't you a turtle? But how can this turtle and otter find a way to coexist and communicate? So I think it makes it a little bit more fun and enjoyable, and let go of those expectations that other people are anything like you, because more often than not, they're not. So that's my two cents.
That's awesome, Michael. And I would add this to that, because it actually came up in one of the interviews. I can't remember which one, go figure. But the word curiosity, becoming ultimately and authentically curious. So instead of trying to just talk and not listen and project your ideas because you know it all, is to approach it with curiosity, to say, I'm, you know, genuinely curious why you feel this way, or where is that coming from? And I'm curious how a turtle thinks, you know, and where those ideas come from. And I want to understand that, because everything enriches us. So approaching, and we can do that with ourselves too. Why do I think what I think? We shouldn't be taking it, you know, for granted everything that we know is true either. You know, so it's approaching ourselves and others with curiosity, and that really opens up conversation on a much deeper level. And it allows us to listen deeply, because when we're genuinely curious, we genuinely want to know the answer, right? So we stop, we're like, huh. And if we don't understand it, we ask more questions. So it becomes this really great and exciting inquiry into ourselves and into each other, and into ourselves in the context of being with another. So it's beautiful. Yeah.
Two ears and one mouth. Listen twice as much as speaking.
Exactly. So Joe, I know you and Joita were going back and forth with Joita's question. So I want to get into that a little bit. We talked a little bit about this, but I just want to honor Joita and bring it up here. And she's talking about that there's a lot of people awakening now, but she's recognizing that the only friend who somehow seems to understand what's going on, as to speak, and who has definitely raised a woman, is a friend who has been diagnosed with paranoia, schizophrenia outbreak. And she's talking about, and this is what we talked about earlier, normal and insane in a sense, in the traditional sense. But how, she's asking this, how can I help my friend to allow her to use her sensitivity and not allow her protective mechanisms to act in a way that hurts her as well? Should I try to bring her back somehow to society? I don't feel like it, but I want to embrace her and be there for her. So I think we sort of touched on this and answered this earlier, in a sense, around the normal and insane. But Michael, do you want to add anything to that in lieu of this question directly about this?
Yes, I would love to. And it's such a powerful, and I want to applaud her for recognizing her sensitivity and wanting to connect with her. And I hope I can give a couple practical pieces, but I also want to, it's just been an interesting observation because my grandmother was diagnosed as schizophrenic. And if I'd gone to certain people at certain times in my life, would have gotten diagnosed that way myself. I find it actually what I call soulcosis, not psychosis. In Native tradition, again, even medicine people, shamans were about 2% of the population. It's very interesting to me, schizophrenia, bipolar is in about 2% of the population. So highly sensitive, highly imaginative, high creative people. And what the difficulty is that oftentimes the deep realm of the soul, because people, we don't have soul initiations in our culture, that people develop these ego identities, and I'm sure the psychosynthesis folks here would get this, but when the deep realm of the soul is disconnected, when all of a sudden those deep feelings come up, it's not related to the ego persona of the person. So there's this disconnect. And so what happens is oftentimes, and this the practical piece, the paranoia and schizophrenia, the person is taking very powerful symbolic meaning and making it literal. And so if you could help her basically begin to see, I always say I've never met a hallucination or delusion that wasn't chock full of meaning. And this primary process is actually living and literal to them. So yes, you want to create a bridge for her. First thing is just help her feel, you know, normal, literally. Sanity is nothing more than really good editing, basically. You know, who to say to what, when. The other thing is insanity is nothing more than invalidated experience. So an N of one matters. If you can honor her experience, but then help her begin to, yes, it's almost like speaking two languages. And I'll give you an example. I worked in locked units for many years. And this one situation with this one woman, they couldn't get her to put on her clothes to go down to eat, right? So, and everybody was giving her a really hard time. And most people, they say they're disturbed. It's not that they're disturbed. They're just disturbing everyone else because it's questioning everybody's reality. And so what's so interesting, as soon as I was able to validate her feelings and her quote delusions, she all of a sudden the craziness drops away oftentimes. And then you can ask that person, I could get her, put her on her clothes and go to get something to eat. She just wanted to be heard and mirrored. Now, the unfortunate thing is once somebody's in a psychiatric system, they're past their first quote breakthrough breakdown, then they've got all kinds of other issues going on. But I can't emphasize enough that see her as human, as valuable, as having, yes, a gift. Oftentimes, the very things that's getting pathologized are these very gifted aspects of the highly sensitive, highly imaginative. So build that bridge slowly, though, because that resistance, and help her if she could see these things symbolically versus literally, and begin to see it's almost like speaking two languages, and you can become an incredibly important person in her life. There's some wonderful online resources. There is the peer support is a whole great movement in the consumer movement for those who have been diagnosed with some fairly severe quote mental illnesses, and they have some wonderful resources, and I would definitely move them in that direction. But I applaud your ability to see that she has gifts and her sensitivity, and she gets things no one else in your life does. Isn't that amazing? And to me, that's, I always felt really comfortable talking to people who were psychotic. I'm like, oh man, you're my I get which could be diagnostic for me, and that's okay.
That's probably why we get along so great, Michael.
it's all coming out now.
I'm out of the closet. Yes. I have been psychotic. Soulcosis. Yes.
Yes. Oh, so good. So good. So I want to note right now, there are three more questions that I'd really like us to look at. It is 7 o'clock. I don't know if everybody's okay. Maybe we can extend just about 10 minutes or so.
Yes.
Cool.
awesome because there's just so much. We go on forever. There are a couple, I don't want to end here because really I do want to take a look at a few more questions that seem important to me. let's see here. So one of them has to do with, okay, this question is actually directed towards you, Michael, but I want to really open this for everybody. Do you find a correlation between the level of success a person achieves and the level of struggle they've had to overcome to achieve that success? And he made reference to your story about your surgeries and, you know, how that moved in you and moved you into a great awakening in your life. And also recognizing that it seems to be a common theme in many spiritual teachers that there's sort of a norm or a template, if you will, that there's like, this, you know, some deep crazy situation that happens, a great dark night of the soul, and then boom, we come out. But what about those of us that have been well adjusted and had a great childhood and, you know, are still moving into this space? So his question is, so this is his question, you know, do you find there's a correlation between the level of success a person achieves and the level of struggle that they've had to overcome to achieve that success? So that's kind of like part one. And then there's another question from somebody else that has to do with, and I think that we can move right in from this and speak about both, the shadow. When we start to recognize our shadow in our struggles and the things that trigger us, how do we face that rather than running away from it? So I know it's kind of a question in two parts, somewhat related, but there it is. I'm going to throw that out to the panel. So what about this correlation? And then when the shadow appears.
I'd say something about that, Val.
Yes, John, please.
One of the things that I think about in terms of the psychosynthesis framework is that, you know, we're all constructing a personality as we grow up and to our teenage years and adult years. And it's basically a personality that works for us and we continue along until it doesn't. So there's something about the struggles that we go through that ask something of us that's beyond who we know ourselves to be.
Beautiful.
So we might not have to look at the shadow or look at parts of who we are until our shiny resume self isn't good enough anymore. We talk about in psychosynthesis, if you remember, the false positive, false negative model. We all wanna show our best in the world and present that, and that's wonderful, and that's natural. Until the construction that we have of who we are somehow meets up with some challenge. And I think we talk about the challenge and the growth, and that's what it is. It's that the self that we've constructed up to this point is kind of insufficient to the task that we're facing, or the challenge, bringing the same person that we are to resolve an issue in our lives just keeps us going in the same loop. So, you know, the example of that is a subpersonality who's a pleaser. I can do whatever I want, and if I'm pleasing people, it's all working out great. But what happens when I want to say something that somebody's not going to like, right? So all of a sudden, I'm at a choice point, and I'm at a point of growth that somehow I'm going to have to say something that somebody's not going to like. I'm going to have to find a bigger way to express a more whole truth of who I am. So that's kind of how I see that piece. And the shadow really is just anything we don't want to really look at or own.
Both positive and negative shadow in that way, because the repression of the sublime is as likely to be the stumbling block for us where we forget our divine nature, or we also forget our diabolical or ugly nature. So yeah. Let go of that story, and then we are everyone, and we are everyone's story.
Absolutely. And I think what we're seeing in a big way now is a collective shadow playing out.
Yes.
So what does that mean to experience our shadow? That we might start there too and say, you know, when you feel ultimately triggered by somebody else in some way, either it's like, oh my God, this person really like does it for me, or whoa, this person, like, what is that? You know, when we feel a rise in ourselves, positive or negative, but somehow like ultimately charged, that's when we want to look a little bit deeper into what's triggering that, you know. So we're coming back to the self-inquiry and the curiosity, you know, of diving in and saying, ultimately, why do I feel so passionate about this? Well, the person next to me is not even noticing them. So this is a good place to start recognizing how our shadows are showing up.
Yeah, and what's so fun is that equally to the experience of equal to the experience of exploring our shadows and diving into our shadows and extracting all the nutrient yumminess. It's kind of like this kind of energetic kale. We don't really like it. We don't want to chew it, but here it is, and our willingness to be with it. I mean, there are such nutrients present. Our willingness to be with this, but equal to the experience of diving in and receiving the nutrients is also noticing that a shadow also by its very nature announces the presence of light, announces the presence of this awakened wholeness that's here, even as we explore the experience of a self and of a self going somewhere.
I love that, the energetic kale and really recognizing that a shadow can't be created without the light.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Beautiful, Ash.
Yeah, Ash, I'm going to use that in my next book. It's going to be Suffering is Your Psychic Kale.
Okay, chew on that.
I love that. And I'll just that the one piece about suffering, I will say I love Rilke when he says, I will tell you how a man grows by being defeated by greater and greater things. And I do believe success, we're talking about wholeness, that there is a direct correlation between suffering and deepening and development of wholeness. And that brings us to Buddha's first noble truth, life is suffering. And I think one of the huge shadows of our culture is the inability. We've built a culture, Western culture is created around the denial of suffering, death, aging. And it's made us immature spiritually and emotionally, and we're seeing that played out. I mean, unfortunately, what's happening today is it could be predicted. I mean, it's just the death throes of Western culture, that's all. And it's just coming to the surface. Exactly this is the logical outcome of what we did to the genocide of the native people of this culture, then the inability to explore and touch the feminine, when I say feminine, the yin energy of relatedness and interconnectedness. And when we took the path of being separate from nature and dominating it, this is the logical outcome, unfortunately. I was hoping we might not have to face this darkness so blatantly in our face, but it looks like that's going to be our path.
Yeah. Yes. And so why it is even more important for us to come together in the ways that we are right now to dive into this conversation, you know, and to get really clear about what it is that we're experiencing inside of us and to know that we're not alone on this journey. And that, you know, this sort of, I think Brian Swim said it in the interview with, he, you know, this is like an evolutionary dead end we're moving into right now. So we're just seeing this complete collapse, right? The great unraveling. You know, while simultaneously the great turning and this amazing awakening that's happening because of the great cataclysm. So there's just, you know, all this cataclysm happening that's moving us towards greatness, if you will.
Yeah, can I speak into that just for one second?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, here we are in this awakening that we talked about earlier, and there's almost like an unspoken and spoken declaration, a declaration of peace, a declaration of love, a declaration of like all this beauty that we are. And in the trainings that we have, you know, we talk about the moment you declare something that is like who you are right now is not the person that would be the person you need to be to have that happen. So the moment that declaration happens, you're in immediate breakdown. And everything is going to come your way. Like, you know, the universe is going to go like, oh yeah, world peace. Well, here you go, you know, or here you go. And you're like, we call it living in the gap. And the beauty about living in the gap is that's where the juice is. And like, we're literally sitting in the gap right now. And we can, you know, fortunately we have choice, right? We have choice. So we can either be like, I can't believe this is happening. Or we could be like, wow, like, look what we're bringing on right now. And let's just fuel it. Let's keep going. We have a declaration. It's being thrown at us and we're going to go for it. And that's, you know, that's why I'm here, and I'm so excited with you guys being here, and I'm fired up.
I love how many different ways we have to say the same thing.
Yes, totally.
I'm just feeling into like all the different language that we use, and we're all, you know, it's so perfect because we all hear it differently, right? We're living in the gap, mind the gap. Here we are. You know, and it makes me think of this beautiful quote, all that we're talking about, which I love. It's a smooth sea never made one a dexterous sailor. A smooth sea never made one a dexterous sailor. Like, we need those storms. We need these rocky waves and these crazy crashes, and we need it because it shows us what's inside of us. It ultimately empowers us to know who we are and how we can show up more fiercely, more passionately, more powerfully in the world right now. You know, so this is like, yeah, this is a great time. Even as it feels so like heavy and intense, and it does, and we are in it. You know, it's also an amazing moment in this evolutionary story.
Yes. An
amazing moment that we're all part of, stepping into ourselves as ancestors. All right. You guys ready? This is the final one. This is very light, really easy, and I think it's going to give a lot of resources for people. So we went deep. We got into so many good, juicy things, and I know there's many, many more questions. Obviously, we can't get to them all, but I feel like I wanted to try to pull out, you know, the heart of and the themes that I saw repeating when people were asking. So here's something fun for all of us to end with, which I think will be great for everyone, and it's this. Let's talk about our favorite resources, our favorite books and movies that can give people somewhere to go, to read more, to watch more, to, you know, websites, whatever it is that you guys have, like maybe one or two of your favorite books and resources and what you're reading now. So let's kind of end with that so we can end with this, you know, a way for people to move forward. And just so you know, guys, Jen had to run. So she sends her love. Jennifer Grace says, you know, sends her love to all of us. She actually had to run. I know we're a little over. But thank you all for being able to stay a little longer. So let's go for it. Whoever wants to jump in first.
I'll jump in because you just talked about sailing and finding who you are. So I'm going to say movie right now, Moana. Moana. It's actually a cartoon, but it has all of it in it about your calling and, you know, the goddess and everything. And it's beautiful. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Beautiful, Joe. Awesome. Thank you.
Movies, I'll go for Arrival.
Yes, I loved Arrival.
where time starts to bend. And intuition and seeing the future are the solution.
That's really interesting. And Dee Dee, do you have any favorite books that have inspired you in your life?
I have a lot of favorite books. As I began to retire, I stopped reading psychology, and that was one of my favorite books to stop reading, was anything in the field of psychology. And now I just read novels. So, and I read lots of them. So right now I don't have one that comes to my mind, but I say pick up a novel because novelists, poets, philosophers, songwriters say it way better than my experience of a lot of us in psychology say it.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. I haven't seen Arrival yet. I'm looking forward to it.
So yeah, I can jump in on Arrival too. Mind blowing. Lots of synchronicity. So I'm right there with Dee Dee and Ash. I mean, incredible, especially as a musician. Ash, I'm sure appreciate the
yes.
Soundtrack was amazing. And this whole, so many levels and layers to this, that movie and the circularity and connection of time and the circular understanding of this is a huge issue too in Western culture. This linear understanding of time versus the circular understanding of time is something really, really, really need. A book I'm reading right now, Sacred Ecstatics, which is pretty amazing. And if I'm just going to do a shameless plug, my new book, Peace Within, is something that I'm just really honored. I talk about my own suicidal journey in here, going through my suicidal feelings and struggles. And I really applaud the person who was really wanting to talk about that. 22 vets a day are committing suicide. And the other piece, a book that saved my life at 18, which goes along with this, is Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. I think everyone should read this book. And the whole idea of what gives us meaning. We live in a culture focused on purpose and goal-driven activity. The mind cannot confer meaning or value, only the heart. So when we're in touch with what matters to us, we say things like, this moved me, this matters to me, this touched me. Mm-hmm. Ask those questions. And this is something Viktor Frankl understood in a deep way, you know, finding the meaning of one's life. Mm-hmm. So that's my two cents, Val.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I would just add, Val, two books. One, if I think about the field that we work in psychosynthesis, the first book that I think was really accessible was Piero Ferrucci. It's called What We May Be. Excellent. I think it's a great starting point for people who want to get into spiritual psychology. And then, you know, also going back to what Dee Dee said in novels and tying back into the theme of mental illness, there's a great book, and I read it because when I heard the title, I thought, I've got to read this book. And it's called All My Puny Sorrows. And it's really the story of these two sisters. And one is a very talented musician, mentally ill, and just wants to die and just wants her family to help her die. And her sister loves her and wants to keep her alive. So it's a very heartwarming story about these two sisters. And there's a lot of beauty in it, a lot of humor in it, a lot of life. And it touches on some of the themes we talked about tonight. So I really loved it. It made me laugh and cry.
Thank you, John. Beautiful. Yeah.
And I too have to go, so thank you.
Thank you, John.
John. Gosh, I noticed that I'm forever fed by the beauty, the bounty, the deliciousness of 13th century Sufi poet Rumi and poets like Kabir and Hafez. Mm. So I have all of these poetry books by my bed. I'm also loving the writings and teachings of a Tibetan monk by the name of Longchenpa has been really inspiring lately. Arrival was incredible, as both of you so beautifully mentioned. And just, you know, one thing that I discover is like falling in love with the poetry of what's appearing at every moment. Mm. Because life is so poetic. When we take a moment to notice our capacity to experience the moment through the filter of all that we have learned, which is a beautiful intelligence, and also take a moment to notice and experience the moment, kind of like nakedly seeing from within. Such poetry, such bounty, such synchronicity. I mean, talk about harmony and fluidity and a sweet exposition of love in action. Mm. It's fun to play around with our perception. It's like different degrees of poetry revealing itself at any given moment.
And let us not forget music.
Hallelujah.
Soothes the savage soul.
Oh my
God.
Yay.
To the music of the soul, the song of the soul. Mm.
And there's, for anybody watching this, I was a part of a band for many years called Here to Hear. And all of our music is online for free. And we have albums and albums of songs that are like the soundtrack of the awakening experience that you're so welcome to tap into and use as support in your journey. Yeah,
that's a lovely gift. Thank you.
Absolutely.
You can always make a Michael Brandt Di Maria Pandora station too.
Yay.
Yay. We're talking about resources, and many of our researchers are right here. You know, I'll share like one of my favorite books is Brian Swim's books, The Hidden Heart of the Cosmos. Mm. And it's just so awakening. They're really bringing us deeper into this unfolding evolutionary journey in such a poetic way. And it speaks to what's happening in this time in a very practical way as well. And it's grounded in science and it's in the heart and it's just so passionate and beautiful. And also Thomas Berry, who was another recurring, you know, we heard about him a lot. He wrote a book called The Dream of the Earth. And it's really a breakthrough book. I think everybody needs to read that book. You know, and he gets into so much about what's happening in our world and what we can do about it, even about our educational system and how to bring the earth as our primary teacher into our consciousness in every facet of life. And it's a really, again, very powerful book, The Dream of the Earth. Another one I want to recommend is Bill Plotkin, someone else who I've journeyed with and Michael knows as well and Didi knows as well, who he's written many books. Soulcraft and Nature and the Human Soul is so good. And Wild Mind is another one. So Bill Plotkin, amazing. And then speaking of poetry, David White. David White, just another world. So rich. So just pulling off the layers and layers and getting right into the deeper questions. So awesome. And for any mamas out there, the book that I'm actually reading right now, it's called It's Okay Not to Share.
And I also want to mention it, poetry, Mark Nepo, anything by Mark Nepo. Book of Awakening, Reduced to Joy, just extraordinary, constant inspiration for me.
And a neuroscience book, which goes right back to music, and the actual literal healing power of music is The Brain That Changes Itself by Norman Doidge, who has done some incredible research, not only with music, but all through the changed view of the brain that actually doesn't stop growing at 21 like we told our children when I was growing up. This is your last year.
It's your last year.
This is it. You got to get it all in there right now.
Right.
Good thing we're continuing to learn.
Yes.
Case in point. Oh, these are great. These are wonderful resources, guys. Absolutely. And of course, you know, documentaries, The Journey of the Universe, which we opened the whole summit with, you know, with Brian Swim and Mary Evelyn Tucker and John Grimm, is an amazing documentary. As you can see, I'm like, you know, really big on cosmology because I feel like it sets the context for all of this, really. It holds everything inside of it to understand ourselves in this way. Thank you so much, you guys. I know we're way over, and everybody stayed too. I don't think we didn't lose any of our participants. Everybody stayed, but I know some of our friends have to go. So Michelle also sends her love and says goodbye. It's been such an incredible journey. This entire summit, diving in with each of you, has been such a blessing and an awakening for me. And it's been just fun to just chat with you on these profound levels, you know, and see myself in all of you and just honor each of you for your deep wisdom.
And how about a thank you tone to Val from the rest of us?
Awesome, okay. Awesome, let's do it.
Okay, Ash, lead us. Thank you, Valerie.
I receive
that. Thank you, Valerie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Val.
Thank you to everyone. And thank you to all the amazing participants who have been with us for this entire 11 days now. It's really exciting. And I also want to give thanks to each of you for your not only your wisdom, but also the free gifts that you gave to everyone. And to those of you, Dee Dee and several others who did these master classes that are part of the upgrade package, also so rich. So there is still an opportunity for everyone, you know, tonight to save $100 off of that. It's only $97 to get all of the videos, all of the audios, the master classes, the bonuses. There's some really rich things, just so much in that. So take a look at that. Really want you to be able to take this information home with you. And 50% of everything, all of our proceeds are going to the Children in Nature Network and also all of these amazing charities that each of our speakers are representing. So it's an amazing way to support ourselves and to give back to community, to charities, and to this amazing vision that we're all holding together as we move forward in conscious evolution.
Thank you. Blessings and good night.
Yeah. Good night, everyone.
Good day. Good night. Good night.
Such blessings. Good night
to some people.
Much love, everyone.
So much love.
God bless you.